Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
I was hoping to have a good news update here, and I'm not seeing it right now.
Uh-huh. I don't know if there's somebody out there trying to reach us with good news, and we just can't seem to get to them, or what?
Good question. Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, another reminder that I don't know.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yes. Yes.
Best laid plans and all that.
Yes. And all that.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just have to make up our own good news unless somebody calls us with some of their own.
That's great. That's great.
So shall I tell you something interesting that
I would love to hear.
From today.
Yes.
I was talking with a friend who's, you know, who also does awareness practice, and was talking about how this is related to good news. How people, how much power people give what we talk about as negative emotions. Think about, learn to call negative emotions.
Uh-huh.
That negative emotions are perceived as really powerful. And
I see.
And emotions that are positive are not perceived as powerful.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, you know, I was so angry that I realized I just need to quit my job. But
yes.
The same person doesn't say, I was so happy that I realized I just want to do some volunteer work for my company.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah, and so that's why I think it's so important that we do have good news and that we focus on the good news in life, because and what's working and what feels good and what makes us happy and what we're successful with, because that negative conditioning is so powerful. It's powerful. It's perceived as powerful. You know, if I get upset enough, then I need to take action.
Yeah.
It feels, for most people, powerful within them. You know, if egocentric karmic conditioning starts, or self-hate starts a campaign about something, there's really no way to counteract that. I just have to just wait until it finishes with me.
I see.
Because I don't have enough power to go up against it. And, of course, that's not true. We do. And it's also not true that it takes power to go up against it. What it really takes is shifting our attention away from it and putting our attention on what we want to have in our lives, how we want our lives to be, who we really are.
Yeah.
And as soon as we do that, then that negativity has no power over us, and it's not perceived as a powerful force and like that. So I just thought that was kind of good news-ish.
It sounds good news-ish to me.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that one of the critical pieces of what you're saying is the perception that it's powerful.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually not. It's
yes.
Just that when people get a whole lot of adrenaline going in their bodies and a story that there's something wrong attached to it, then it seems really compelling.
Yes.
And the fun part for me in awareness practice is to realize that we can at any point just drop all of that, turn our attention back to where we want to live, and that same energy that seemed so negative a moment before is then actually perceived as positive. So the angry voice can just be dropped, and all of that energy is available, and very often what a person will do is start laughing.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just a lot of energy in the body. It's a lot of energy with a story.
Yes. Yes.
So if somebody had called to tell you about good news, what was the good news that they were going to tell you about? Do you know?
Yes. Well, I have a little idea. And it has to do with the peace storming that's going to be in East Palo Alto, let's see, next week or the week after that, which is October 1st to 3rd. And it involves service work at the Ecumenical Hunger Project, as well as a walk relay to San Francisco.
Yes, all of which sounds like a great deal of fun, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sherry, perhaps you can tell us why people are walking.
Yes. Well, of course, the walking piece of it is just, let's face it, it's mostly a good time. It's for me, it's inspired by St. Francis. As you know, I actually don't know how long ago. Was it just last year that the group of us walked in Italy?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
That's astounding. It seems like years ago. But I think it was just last fall. And we set about following the footsteps of St. Francis around the Rieti Valley. And that's for those of you know people who are St. Francis fans, you know that that's what he did. He walked, and he loved God, and that was those were his two primary activities, not in that order. And when he would encounter people, he would interact with them in a way that often left people inspired and with an open heart and more in keeping in line with his philosophy of life or his view of how God wants people to be, which is gentle and kind and loving and in service to one another and caring and supportive and that sort of thing. So St. Francis, you know, is a Catholics think he's Catholic, but Buddhists think that he is actually Buddhist. And so he's just a very holy person who belongs to everyone because his message was so just so heartfelt and loving and kind and gentle.
Yeah.
And so we walk in that spirit, and of course we're walking to the bridge walk. We're walking. We're doing relays because I don't know how far it is. Something like 40 miles, and so we are trying to do two things at once. One is to help the people at the Ecumenical Hunger Program do some big work that they just don't have the people power and probably realistically the financial power to accomplish on their own. And so that's what peace storming is. We just get a bunch of folks together. And again, very much in the spirit of St. Francis, again, that's what he and his brothers did. They would work with people all day and then the people would feed them. So we go there, we get a bunch of folks together, and we work and do projects that people aren't able to do on their own. And so it's a great way to be together with people that we might ordinarily never cross paths with. And we share a desire to be in service. Ecumenical Hunger Program is a service agency, which is one of the reasons that they don't have more money. So we support them, and they support us, and we all just have a good time together. And at the same time, members of our group will be doing this walk to the bridge walk. And there we get to do walking meditation and, you know, just enjoy the beauty of being outdoors and walking along and doing some walking meditation. And the whole thing just puts us in that wonderful frame of mind of, how good life is, and how wonderful it is to be in service and to be in the company of caring, loving people.
Yes, yes.
So we, you know, this is a big deal for us, and of course, it takes us a while to grow these things. It takes anybody, I suppose, a while to grow these sorts of things. But this is something that we want to do more of. We would like to eventually be doing this kind of retreat around the country, you know, maybe three or four times a year instead of just the once that we're able to manage now.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's just such a beautiful way to be with our fellow humans. There's another piece of it too, Michael, which is that it's very much what we're going to be doing at Ecumenical Hunger Program is very much what we do in Africa, and where we go into a community of people and offer our you know, whatever it is that we have to bring to it to be of service to them. And people will often say, you know, why are you going? I guess it's 12,000 miles away. I don't know. I've never actually looked up how far. It's a long darn way, I'll tell you that, to do this work when there are so many things that you can do here at home, so many people here at home who could use assistance. And we agree. So we, you know, we'd like to be able to do more of this kind of thing at home.
Yes, yes, it is really inspiring and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the work in Africa, the blogs for the most recent trip are just, I don't know if it was the space I was in or the blog, but I was terribly moved and inspired from reading them.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's an inspiring time.
Yeah.
And not everywhere, perhaps, but certainly in our work there. We, all of us, around the world who have partnered in this project have been working really, really hard for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's beginning to come together in a way that is just undeniably transformative.
Yeah.
You know, there's, we're working toward, you know, we don't have this, we don't have that. There's no medical care, there's no water, there's no school, there's no food, there's no employment, you know. Okay, and now we're to the point where that's just not true.
Yes.
There is water, there is school, there is food, there is medical care, and there is growing employment. Now that we've started the home improvement loans, it's just, I mean, people's lives are just taking off. And I don't know if, maybe it hasn't come out yet, but there's a lady, Annie, who is very old, and we would see her on the road all the time. She was raising her granddaughter, and her granddaughter was in the school program. I imagine the parents were dead, and she would be trying to say something to us, and we could never understand what she was saying, and there was never anybody around to tell us what she was saying, but you know, we just sort of all did one of those look at each other and made a commitment to this woman. We said, well, we got to find work for her. And so she became part of the Living Compassion team of women over there. And as you know, the project that we're currently most focused on is the roofs for the houses, because the rain is going to start in a couple of weeks, maybe a month. And the houses are going to fall down, and that people have probably read about that. But they're made out of mud. They just have torrential downpours, and the house is going to fall down. And, I mean, you can imagine being a family living in a house that's going to come down around your ears when you're sleeping at night. It'd be absolutely terrifying. So here they are, the people who are working for Living Compassion are getting their roofs on, and there's Annie. You know, I don't know how old she is. She's old. And she's standing in front of this house with this brand new roof on it. And she's just saying over and over and over, this is my house. This is my house. This is my house. And just the, you know, the joy of it, to have something happen to you that you would never have believed would happen to you in your whole entire life. That's what she's experiencing. You know, she's been dirt poor, living in a squatter slum all of her life, you know, probably based on the fact that it's just Annie and the child. You know, she's lost her relatives. There's no, until Living Compassion came along, there's no hope of employment. You know, who's going to hire somebody like her to do what? And it's extraordinary to be able to participate in something like that.
Yes, it is. And it was extraordinary reading about all of that in the blog as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very, very fun. And it's the kind of thing that turns a person's whole life into good news.
Good news all around.
Good news all around. Yeah. When we are doing things that reflect our authentic nature, when we are engaged in a life that self-hate cannot deny is a good life, then for self-hate to make a strong enough argument to take us out of our well-being. And that's what everybody who's involved in this work around the world can know. And if they don't know, they need to call into this radio show. Okay? Good people doing good stuff get good. To feel good and enjoy a good life.
Yes.
And it's not just me saying so. The Buddha said it.
Speaking of people calling in, we have a couple of callers here.
Good.
Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hey, Janet.
Hey, this is so exciting.
Isn't it?
Yes, and I just loved your story. Oh, my God, I hadn't heard about her.
Uh-huh.
That was just such a great story.
Yeah, well, so, I think it must be coming out in one of the, you know, maybe the next one or the next one. Because it's this great picture of Annie and Friday standing there in front of her completed house. It's
very, very cool. That I love it. Yeah, I've heard of Friday, but I hadn't heard of her. So that was wonderful.
Yeah.
I wanted to call because I'm actually teaching a class for the next 8 weeks, so I wouldn't be able to call. And I just wanted to touch base on some things.
Great.
First of all, coming back from my month out there in August has been so easy, and I was really surprised about that.
The voices wanted to convince you it was going to be just hard and awful, and you probably wouldn't be equal to the task.
Yeah, that and yeah. And I had heard some stories on the radio of other people who had come back. You know, it was really hard getting back into life and da-da-da. And, you know, so I was like, oh, well, that's going to happen to me. And how, you know, I shouldn't have, like, you know, lined things. I shouldn't have, like, gone to work, like, the next day. You know, I should have, like, figured that out. And luckily, I was really with it enough to not let that enter in my last week there.
Oh, good.
Because it tried to come up and I just kept, you know, I just didn't go there.
Yeah.
So I came back and I just can't tell you, everything has just been easy. And I feel like I'm, I'm not back to my full-on schedule and I don't really care how long that takes to get to there. And if it does get to there. I just feel like I'm just being present.
Well,
and
it sounds like you're living that old, I don't know where it came from, probably it was made up, you know, 2 years ago somewhere close by. But the, you know, the old Chinese guy with the one son and the one horse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
You know that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all of these things happen and people say, oh, that's great, or, oh, that's awful. And his response is, well, who knows? We'll see. And it would just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And so here we are in this moment, you know, with conditioning, predicting how the future is going to go. And, well, who knows? We'll see.
None of the predictions that I, you know, came up briefly while I was out there, you know, to the horror of what was going to happen, none of them happened.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was the opposite, you know, like just I just can't even say. Everything's just been really easy, and I feel great. And it was just wonderful. The only thing is my mother, she's so funny. She goes, don't ever do that again. She goes, I'm glad that you're home and you've gotten that out of your system. She
okay,
knows.
Mom.
I know. I was in San Diego with her, and she marked on her calendar. She's going senile, but she marked on her calendar 4 weeks. So I left on a Friday. I should have been out on a Friday. You know, and she didn't know that you guys had my cell phone. I said, this is exactly why you didn't have my number where I was. She called me like 6 times that day. They must have let you out by now. So I had to hear from my mother, and then she was like, okay, but you sound good. I guess it's all right. That was really funny. So the other thing is I'm doing the 3-month course.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we did this summer was we finished the floors in our house before I left. So we, instead of moving back into the bedroom, I'm making that bedroom into a yoga meditation room that I can... Yeah, I can easily fit about 10 people in there.
Ooh, nice.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful space. And so it's still being worked on right now. But one of the things I wanted to do was, I've always wanted to do something from here, from my house. And so I was thinking about the things that, really touch me. And one of them is a gratitude practice. And the other is giving. And the other thing that I wanted to do was I want to get a group of people together and do those collages where you're like wish, your dream, where you cut out pictures.
Oh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
I forget what you call it, like a vision board or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I started thinking, oh, I want to have a workshop, and have people come and do things around gratitude, giving, and the art kind of thing with that. And then I started thinking, well, it just keeps getting grander and grander. Because then I was thinking, well, I don't just want to do one day. I actually want to start people out with, let's start doing a gratitude practice, then get together and see what that's like.
Uh-huh.
Random act of...
Here's the thing with something like that. Again, conditioning would say, okay, well, it should be this. You need to do this. But what you're seeing is once you open up that creativity, it's like, well, I could do this. I could do this. And I could do that. I could do that. And it just doesn't end. And some of the things will be, you'll love, they'll be, I'm like making little quote marks in the air here, they'll be successful,
mm-hmm.
and other things won't. People, won't show up for it, or they won't like it, or they, whatever it is, but that's not going to stop you from getting completely excited about the next thing that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really like that, and there's something about, I've been really interested in the class because it seems like, we're all coming from really different places, and to me, it was like such an opportunity to like really expand and explore.
Yes.
And that's the way it came across to me, and I'm just like so excited about it.
Yeah. Oh, and hopefully... Of course, my wish and dream is that never change for you.
Yeah.
That you just realize that everything, anything that you can think of is a possibility for you. You just turn your attention to it, and there it is. And again, if we don't get into a conversation about what something means,
yeah,
then you can do all of this. You decide whatever. I have a good friend who is a yoga teacher, and or by trade, and a friend invited her to go to a sculpting class, and she said, "Okay, it would be a fun thing for us to do together. You know, I have no talent, and but it, you know, sure, okay, why not? It's what she does for a living now, and she is the most extraordinary artist.
Oh my gosh!
In fact, I'm looking at this seated Buddha character, this kind of Chinese, almost a Ho Tai character that that she made that was in her house in the place where I've done workshops, and I admired it so long and loud that she finally gave in and made a gift of him to me. That really wasn't my intention, but it is one of my most treasured you know, things that I share my home with. So,
and I'm knowing exactly where those sculptures are.
Uh-huh.
So I, oh my God, that's such a great story.
Yeah. And we don't know. If we stick with the voices of conditioning, nothing is available to us. If we can move into that place of, I don't know. Let's just see where it goes. I was talking to somebody else recently, and what we were talking about was how often, kind of, again, here go the fingers in the air, but miracles happen to us when we are open to what people tell us. And she was telling me the story about, she does a particular healing practice. It's called NAET. It's an allergy elimination treatment. And this little boy was brought in by his mother. And I think the mother came in for some purpose, you know, to have some treatment in this doctor's office. And anyway, this poor little guy looked like, she said he looked like something from outer space. He was so swollen and just covered with these sores from scratching himself, and they finally had to put him in a burn suit and all of this. And it turns out that he was allergic to something in his environment. And she was open to the possibility that somebody could cure him of that. And he went through this treatment. And 6 months later, he's a normal little boy. But
wow.
If we listen to conditioning say, oh, no, that's oogum boogum, that's hocus pocus. You know, they're just, this is blah, blah, blah. Then the person who's saying, well, you know, have you ever tried adding that to your diet? Or, you know, I have this friend who had that condition, and, you know, we don't hear it. We're not open to it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting that all over the place right now, you know, because when I just came back, I had to move to a new school because I teach school, and so I was put in a room with two other people that I don't really, you know, and I from that standpoint, it was like, oh, we probably would never get along, you know, and we get along so well, and I have had so much fun with them, and it's so great, but if I were to listen...
Right. If you had gotten to choose and you had listened to conditioning, it would have never happened.
No, none
well,
of it. So
this is all good news.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling. It's good news, and I wanted to call before I couldn't call for 8 weeks. And,
yeah.
Oh, my God, I had my month out there was just fantastic.
Good.
Beyond
so you
anything.
You recommend those month-long practice periods.
I totally recommend it, yes. And everyone says, would you go back? And I'm like, definitely, yes. So
a good time.
So,
all right, well, you take care of yourself.
Thank you. You guys take care of yourself, too.
All right. Thanks
okay.
for calling, Janet.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling, Janet. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind, what a life.
please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I sure do love it.
I sure do love it. Sounds like practice.
Mm.
We have three more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to call and report back because it's been since August that I called.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm taking my headset off because it's echoing.
Yes, you did sound like you were calling from a distant galaxy.
Okay, good. So is
this
better
is
now?
Better.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, perfect.
When I called back in mid-August, I had said that I had this whole script running from conditioning complaining about my husband.
Uh-huh.
And you gave me an assignment to identify who was involved, what sub-personalities, and then identify the complaints, pick kind of the chief complaints, and then make a plan to do something about the top three.
Uh-huh.
So needless to say, this is just another one of my personalities, I guess. I never do exactly what anybody tells me,
uh-huh.
but I have been watching this. And so it was kind of a mini workshop because he was gone. So it allowed me to run this whole thing without him actually being here.
Uh-huh.
So that was really helpful for me to see. And I did identify.
That you could do all of that
mm-hmm.
without him there.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Just that.
So he couldn't trigger anything, right? It was just clearly all me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So handy.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was purposefully, you know, I kind of set it up. He goes away for 3 weeks in the summer, and I always look at that time as a perfect workshop opportunity for me.
Uh-huh.
So one thing that I did notice pretty clearly is how when he came back, very little of what was said was actually true in the moment. So my, you know, when he came back,
What you had been hearing was actually not played out with him in real life.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
So in the present moment, I wasn't running any of that. I mean, that person was still there, and so I continued to notice and watch. But I also just really started to see how that gets in the way of then being present for what's really going on, of course, and having like a more true relationship from a compassionate place, starting to identify the places where the other thing I said to you was, I know this is projection. So I got to see the sort of the projection in action. So I'm just going to give you an example of it because this was really clear that we were going hiking and, you know, it's a little more work going uphill. So I tend to have this little grumbly thing going on about going uphill. And it was early in the morning when we started out, and he said a few things that kind of took me aback. And I started running this little story then. And then I realized, you know, that's not going to get you what you want. What you want is to have a good time on this hike with this person. And all you're doing is complaining about this person not doing all these things that you think they should do, but you're not doing any of those. You're doing this.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is big.
Yeah, it was. It was because then I did this practice that I have with breathing the white spirals into my body, and I just got into my body and left that, tried to drop that whole script. And we had a completely different type of experience because
uh-huh.
I really saw that projection there that, you know, here you are just spewing venom at this person that you say you want love and affection from. How is that going to happen here? So that was just, it's actually changed a lot in my, just I continue to watch and kind of see for that, but it's just changed more in my understanding of how that works and how that's maybe also going on for him. Like, somehow he's not happy and things aren't, you know, we can't have a dialogue successfully if I'm doing that and he's doing that. But if I change what I'm doing, then everything can change.
Yes. And a while back, you were talking about what you were seeing. You said, of course. And the beauty of that, the amazing part of that is that when we're in that kind of venom-spewing place that you were describing, it is so real.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it
yeah.
It is so true. He is the jerk of all creation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and the whole thing is a huge mistake. And what was the matter with you in the first place? And then you realize what's going on, take a couple of breaths, step back, and there's no reality to it at all.
Mm-mm.
And it's just amazing. It's unbelievable that the two realities could be that different. And, of course, what conditioning wants us to believe is, but that can't be true. You can't step back and then decide he's a great guy. Because what about this and this and this and this and this? But when you step back, you realize, wait a minute, just as you have realized. First of all, I'm the one doing the interpreting. I'm the one putting all the meaning on this. I'm the one actually doing what I'm accusing him of doing. So let's just stay in this centered place for a while and see what happens.
Well,
you
and part of
know
it,
who he is.
Right. Part of it was, I can hear my subpersonalities, but they have never really named themselves for me. But when I was going through all the exercises while he was gone, it was really clear that, you know, at one point I said kind of like, well, who are you, or something to that effect. And the answer I got was, you know, bitterness and resentment. And, you know, you could definitely see that, you know, you have this expectation and it's never, ever met. And, you know, so you develop this bitterness and resentment, and that's sort of a bottomless well for that person that just can spew all that stuff.
Yeah.
But what that person wants, or what the other side of the duality there is, you know, what you really want is sort of that unconditional love and acceptance.
Yes. And what you've seen in this little experiment is, if somebody in this partnership is going to come up with that, it would be very helpful to start with you.
Right, I have a little better shot at it since I'm engaging in it in the practice.
Yeah, yeah. And with that personality, she really shouldn't be involved with your husband.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
She needs to be involved with you.
Right, right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Looking to
mm-hmm.
you for her care and comfort and
right.
acceptance and that sort of thing. And then you have a relationship with your husband.
Right.
And as you're working on, from as clear and centered a place as you can get to.
Right.
Which
right.
is, of course, the very best that we can do in any situation. Now,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to turn into your Prince Charming dream come true. It doesn't mean that.
No.
But it does mean that from center, you can have the best relationship that you can have with this other human being.
Well, and you know what? I'm sure you've said this, but other people have also said it to me. It's that, you know, that look. You don't actually have to say anything. It's how you carry yourself, and you project that negativity out there or that disapproval out there if you're running the script, whether you open your mouth or not.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. In fact, in an email, somebody had said to me that my face, I can't remember what it was, but, my face and my voice is less sharp, I think was the way it went, from, you know, with doing a practice of coming
mm-hmm.
back to
mm-hmm.
the center. And I said, yes, it's true. Awareness practice will make you better looking. and it does. I mean, I've said that over the years, and people kind of look at me like, but if somebody stays around long enough to watch people when they first come to practice
mm-hmm.
and then watch them through the years, they get more attractive. Mm-hmm. And it's because, as you say, they're not, their whole life force isn't on running that script that makes us tense and tight and generally unpleasant.
So I want to segue just very briefly on it's on a related note. What I've been noticing since we started talking about this practice opportunity back in the spring sometime, and so I have already been kind of focusing this year on my practice anyway and doing a lot of the things that you've been suggesting in the first couple of email classes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've noticed is this whole issue of, and I listened to the archives coming and going from work. So one of the archives talked about the guy with the cigarettes pulling the cigarette out of the pack saying, "Who's the boss?"
Uh-huh.
And I've kind of been working with that a little bit because I realize how these moment-by-moment decisions are you're going for conditioning or for your heart on,
yes.
You know, whether you eat the extra cookie or not. I mean, it's
yes.
all, everything is relevant.
Yeah.
And what I realized last night in the shower is, you know, somewhere in there, somebody's defining what's really real and dismissing other things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has to do with practice and the commitment I made to you to look into the watches.
Uh-huh.
So there's been kind of this running argument, you know I need to work on it, but then there's been this kind of running argument about why I can't.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that running argument goes on with practice on a number of levels. And these things fall into the really real category, and practice falls into the, well, you know, just get around to it when you can, but somehow conditioning will never let you.
Exactly.
So that was a big whack in the head in the
yeah.
sense of, oh, my God, that's been going on all this time, and I fell
and
for that one.
For me, the beauty of that, it so illustrates the way practice works. Now, I will often talk about it as, you know, you're just driving down the road in the car, you're mowing the lawn, or you're washing the dishes, but you can be taking a shower. And there, because we practice, the attention turns in such a way that it creates that little gap.
Mm-hmm.
The conditioning can't fill for a second, and in comes that kind of life-changing insight.
And these things are related in that the one experience and the other are the same kind of stepping
yeah.
back and
yeah.
becoming aware that that's not true, but somehow I'm falling for that decision that someone's making for me.
Yes.
Or,
well, this morning I was in a conversation I'll give people in the class a little preview about where we're headed with this, as if people don't already know. But the most difficult thing for us to try to wrap ourselves around, I can't even say wrap our head around or wrap our mind around, because it's an overall wrap around, is that whole thing, that whole package that we are taught to believe is who I am, is not real.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true. It's a body snatcher takeover. It's at some point. Maybe we'll be able to make a movie out of it. but it's like there's this spark of life force, this spark of authenticity, and then layer after layer after layer of falsehood gets draped over it. And because it doesn't fight back, it doesn't try to escape,
mm-hmm.
You know, it just gets more and more and more cloaked until here we are walking around in the world believing that those outer garments are who we really are, that conversation that I'm listening to is me thinking, that those conclusions, that the I like that, I want to do that, I don't like that, I don't feel like that, I don't want to, you can't make me, is me. because what we actually experience as ourselves is that spark of intelligence, of awareness. And then, of course, the journey begins, just bit by bit, taking off the layers. The Buddha, as you know, talked about it as untying knots in a silk scarf.
Right.
And so there we are. There's a piece of that cloak, and it comes off, and there's another piece, and there's another piece, and there's another piece. And pretty soon we can see that spark is actually quite huge. That spark is as big as life. And that's that moment of realizing, wow, how could I have thought that that harangue, that venom spewing, was who I actually am?
Right, right. Well, this workshop's already got conditioning completely in an uproar several times, and it's been really interesting. I got the assignment I signed up for a class as my practice opportunity, and I got the assignment for it, and it just rocketed off, and, oh, why did you ever sign up for this? You shouldn't have done this, da-da-da-da-da. And it took me a few minutes. I mean, I went for it, and then it was like, oh, yeah, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, you're what I've been trying to see. Gotcha.
So I'm really, I finally was able to download the guided imagery, and I'm looking forward to doing that. And I'm really looking, I see conditioning, and it's scary. It's scared. It gets me going. I get really agitated, and I really have to go with the practice and the faith that the spark is going to get more clear to me.
Yeah, which I think this conversation has proved to you. So this might be one of the archives you want to listen to, because this is very clearly a person who is getting clearer and clearer about who's who and what's what.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity for us to work together. It's going to be it's going to be a hang on to the seat kind of ride.
I think
it'll be good.
And fasten your seatbelt.
Yeah.
Kind of adventure.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Greta.
And I will be sending something on the watches.
All right.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you, Sherry and Michael.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Greta. Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was inspiring. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's good. People are doing good work.
Good people doing good work.
We're
going to have a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
All right, thanks.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have three more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. And could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi.
What's going on in your world?
Well, it's interesting how it's like no matter what I'm looking at, whatever's being talked about on the radio show applies.
Isn't that the best part of Sangha?
It
whatever
is.
Anybody is doing, I'm doing too. And maybe I already had noticed that, and maybe I didn't, but it's all helpful.
I have had an ongoing story for a number of years about my mother. And over the course of the last year, we've taken about 12 steps back in that process. But I have an opportunity this weekend to try again.
Because you're going to spend the weekend together?
I'm going home this weekend.
It's always fascinating. It's always fascinating to me that people use that term. I'm going home. Is it really your home?
Well, you know, it's like listening to the radio show tonight. The one thing that I could really see that from the place of the story and going home, it's just a place of hell.
Yeah.
And it's like it's not, I mean, if there is going to be any chance of freedom and peace with it, it's not going to come from my mother.
Well, exactly. And a big part of it would be realizing that, wait a minute, if I leave home, which is right there kind of in the center of your being, right?
Right.
And if you leave that to go to the home of a story of hell,
yes.
This is never going to turn out well.
And it never has.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more like taking home.
Yeah. Yeah, or taking home to that place.
Well, that's kind of what I was seeing in the radio when you were talking about the good news. It's
uh-huh.
like, and you were talking about going to Africa and extending center, but also extending center and kind of seeing that, you know, it's like, that's kind of like, you know, that's something I've never done with my mother. I've
yeah.
never offered her. I mean, it's kind of like I always go in this defended, protected place.
Yeah, and that I'll project here. You go with a story of what she has done wrong.
Yes.
How she
yes.
has wronged you.
And how unsafe she is.
Huh?
I can't trust her.
Yeah.
So no
yeah.
matter what she says, I can't trust her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And from that yeah. place, I can't.
Well,
from that defended, protected place that I get into.
Can I tell you my? You probably know this, but my teacher's definition of trust. You can always trust that people will be exactly as they are.
Ha.
So trying to trust something else, trying to trust that people will be different, that to trust that this person is going to go beyond herself for me. To trust that I'm going to be able to be clear enough and centered enough to actually see who she is. To trust that, you know, we confuse trust with fantasy.
yes. But that's kind of what I'm asking of myself.
Yeah. And so here's what occurred to me when you first said that you were going to go visit this lady. I thought, I wonder what it would be like if she were just a, how old is she?
64.
Yeah. Well, she's not that old. But if, you know, this older woman, you're just going to visit this older woman. You know,
that I have no history with.
Yeah, you have no history with. She's just, you know, she's just this lady. And she lives in this place and does this and, you know, she has kids and whatever. And what would that be like? Because I project that if it were, in fact, just some lady that you had occasion to spend time with for whatever reason, you'd be fine.
I have with other 64-year-old women.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
who are probably as... The little fingers are going again, as guilty of sins and crimes as your mother. You know? Beth, are you there? Michael, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good.
It looks like we've lost Beth.
Oh, son of a gun.
Son of a gun.
Well, maybe she'll give us a jingle back. In the meantime, I understand we have some other folks.
We do. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and can you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Can you hear me? Hi. Oh, good. Yeah, I'm actually surprised I got on. Anyway, you know, it's excitement and oh, no, I'm on.
Yeah.
So what I'm calling about is something I've been thinking about for a long time, and it's about making a decision whether or not I'm going to stay with my husband or get a divorce. We've been married
uh-huh.
27 years.
Wow.
So it's a really big decision for me. And what's kind of precipitated is that finally both my children went off to college. So now I Now it's him and I.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's no right decision, but this certainly isn't one I take lightly after so much history together. And I also even doubt whether this is the decision. You know, it's like, I don't know what I think I'm going to get from getting a divorce, except maybe being less angry and resentful. But I don't know that I'll be more happy. So I don't know if it's more about me or really about the relationship, but it's what I'm obsessing over.
Uh-huh. Okay,
and,
can I ask you a couple of questions?
You sure can.
Okay. Is he considering the same questions?
You know, at one point we actually sat down and talked about it before the last child left the house and said, well, let's try to make this work for at least another few years, and we did. But I haven't talked to him recently about it, no.
Uh-huh. And so that would be kind of interesting to know, wouldn't it?
It'd be scary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just even bringing the subject, but yeah.
Which brings some insight there in and of itself, doesn't it? That there's a conversation going on inside your head about whether or not you should do this thing. But
yeah.
It would be scary to introduce the subject to the other person who would be really affected by that decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Do you see what I'm pointing at?
I'm not sure, but that's probably
okay.
Why I'm calling.
Okay. Well, what I'm struck by with that is how much of the point of the conversation is just to keep you in the conversation of dissatisfaction.
Rather than moving forward.
Yeah, because I would think if you really were looking at this issue, then bringing him into the discussion would just kind of be reasonable or, you know.
Yeah.
But in fact, somebody saw it as scary. So that makes me wonder if a good part of what's going on is that it's secret inside your head.
Yeah, I think that's, and a piece of it is I want to present it almost as a fait accompli. I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to make it by myself, and then I'm going to announce it.
Yeah.
Versus, because I think if I involve him in it, and I'm this person I've ever thought about that, somehow I'll change my mind or I'll be affected, or he'll say, it's already done. Your papers will be here tomorrow. You know, it renders
so,
me more
so is
vulnerable.
There kind of a feeling with that of being out of control?
Yeah, it'll go in all kinds of directions at a pace that I didn't want to predict. Yeah, it won't be under my control anymore. I will have opened up this whole Pandora's box, and then I'll really have to do something one way or another.
Which is another interesting sentence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to.
I'm not done torturing myself, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm projecting that conditioned mind is getting a big lot of mileage off of just keeping you in this conversation about what's wrong and how you need to do this, and it ought to be that way, and he this, and you that, and
yeah, but it, you know, you're right, and part of it is that I don't even know how to bring it up, how to even have that conversation without pointing it in any direction. You know, just so,
yeah.
Like I said to you, I don't know where to go with this. It's just I'm obsessing.
Yeah,
I'm going over
so,
and over it.
How many children do the two of you have?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they like both of you, I'm guessing?
Pretty much.
I mean, so as much as children like parents, you know.
At
yeah.
that age, right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In their young 20s, yeah.
Yeah. And but having their parents divorced would probably not be high on their list of things they'd like to have to deal with right now.
No, it wouldn't. They're off at college. You know, one's just starting, one just returned. But no, I mean, they would not want this at all. But it
yeah.
wouldn't be as devastating as it would have been years ago when we first talked about it.
Yeah. So it might be really interesting. Where I'm going with that is
okay.
that one of the things that I realized in being married and having children with somebody is that you never actually get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of the clearest examples of karma.
Yeah.
Right? Because these kids are going to go on with their lives. They're going to find partners. They're probably going to have children of their own. They're going to, you know, and they're just going to have to deal. You're going to have to deal with your husband, and they're going to have to deal with the two of you until you die of old age.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it might be really interesting to take this opportunity, since it doesn't sound like there's a great deal of urgency about it.
No, there's not.
To see if you could go through a process of awareness that would enable you to do whatever you're doing from mm-hmm. a kind and loving place.
Yeah. You mean
both of you. You know, it would be wonderful to be able to enroll him in this as well.
You mean if we decided to get a divorce, to do it from a kind and loving place, or if we decided to try and stay
yes.
together?
Either way, to begin a process together that would enable you, whether you spend the rest of your lives together, whether you don't, and just have that relationship that you're always going to have because you're the mother and he's the father
yeah.
of these people,
yeah.
that you can be with one another in a way that honors you as individuals, honors the 27 years of your lives that you spent together, honors
right.
the creative act of producing these children.
Yeah. Yeah, it would, yeah. And I'd have to get over it. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd have to get over that, letting go. To actually, the biggest thing that strikes me is taking it out of my head and having the conversation with him. And I, my preference would be that whatever we did, he was as much with it as I was with it. Because I don't want it to be acrimonious. I don't feel that way. I don't feel angry like I got to, you know, I don't.
Right. Nor
I don't.
Do you want to be the bad guy.
No, I don't.
Yeah, so that your children blame you for the fact that the marriage has ended. And so to see if it would be possible, you know, the beautiful thing, one of the things I like best about Buddhism is it's
mm-hmm.
so long term. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're just not in a hurry. This is an incarnation. You know, we're working out our own salvation, ending suffering, yes, but it's not an urgent sort of thing. And so to
mm-hmm.
take the time that you need to spend with yourself, not in that same conversation of, but really in a practice, mindful, as centered and open-hearted as you can get and be, looking at what are all the aspects of this? Who are, you know, Greta talked a little bit about this. You know, who are the players in this? Who are all the people who are in relationship with this man? And what do they all want? And what are they saying? And what are they doing? And what is conditioning doing, aside from just trying to stir up the maximum amount of suffering at any point in time? You know, what do I really want? And how might I take advantage of this situation to suffering? Not am I going to stay in the marriage, I'm going to leave the marriage. That is really not the question to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really going on with you? And how would you feel about engaging him in this and risking that and being vulnerable in that way? And what would that be like? And could you get to a place of taking care of yourself so that you could be all right with that?
Yeah, and I think the other thing it brings in is I'm not so convinced it's the marriage. That's not, like when you said all the players, it's not something else. It just happens to be what I have on the radar screen as my source of unhappiness or dissatisfaction. But the biggest thing is the only conversation I'm having is in my head. I have never thought about that.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that would be my best encouragement to you.
Okay.
Take your time. Take advantage of this opportunity to slow down, get a sense of what's really going on here. Get out of that conversation in your head. Start opening up to, you know, other things that could be going on, and just as a way of getting to know yourself better.
Mm-hmm,
and again,
mm-hmm.
no hurry in getting into a conversation with him, but just considering what might that be like.
Okay, I can do that.
Then, of course, you have to let us know.
Okay.
You have to check back in, right?
I will. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're
Thanks.
Very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's 6 o'clock. We have one more caller.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think we'd better just invite that very patient person to call early next time, huh?
Yes, yes. And we'll talk with them then.
Yes, yes. Look forward to it. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. I'm leaving very inspired.
All right, me too. Talk
Great.
To you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night.